it kind of seemed appropriate to get the late Harry Carey's voice to start the show today. Harry Carey, of course, the voice of the Cubs for a long, long time. As we talk baseball, we talk the World Series to begin the show. You know, when Harry Carey, he would probably be surprised a little bit at some of the changes that have come to baseball and are about to come again next year. We'll talk about that. We can talk about the Brewers. And, of course, we want to talk about the World Series with our guest, Chelsea Janes. She is a very good baseball reporter for the Washington Post. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Have you been watching the World Series? What are your general questions maybe about Major League Baseball? Questions perhaps about the Brewers and some of the changes that have recently taken place Brewerland? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. Chelsea Janes, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I tell you what. Last night, of course, it was Halloween, and I got the television set up and turned on early because I was handing out 88 pieces of Milky Ways or Snickers bars just to the kids. And at 7 o'clock, I rush in the house, and there's no game. There's no game three.
Yeah, it's I think they really wanted to get that game in, but they have had some rainy games here this year in the playoffs where I think people thought the rain was going to affect the outcome. They've had rain do that when the Phillies played here in the World Series in 2008, and I think Major League Baseball was like, if we can avoid this, if we don't have to even kind of risk this, we're not going to do it. So yeah, a night without baseball, but obviously they'll get it all back going tonight.
Oh, they'll get it back on tonight. I want to go back to the first game because here again, I have the game on. The Astros are ahead 5-0. I'm thinking about turning, but I just sort of inertia. I just left it on while I was fooling around with my iPhone. And then suddenly it got really interesting and turned into one of the great, in my mind, one of the great World Series games.
Yeah, completely agree. I think it was 5-0 at one point.
And, yes.
And Astros have Justin Verlander on the mound, who he's not been great in the World Series, but he's one of the greatest pitchers that we'll see in this era. And within not that much time, I think it was probably less than a half hour. It felt like that game was completely different. And so some of my tweets from the earlier part of the game, people were texting me like, this didn't age very well, which, it didn't, because it all changed so fast. So it really was one of the great games. It really felt like it could go either way the whole time. It's just kind of what you want these games to be. And, I bet we're in for a few more good ones here.
Yeah, I bet we are as well. The second game, I'm kind of rooting for the Phillies, even though they sort of nudged the Brewers out. I'd like them to win. Game two got started sort of the same way game one got started, with Altuve right off the bat, three doubles in a row or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was three doubles in a row, and I think three runs in four batters. It did not take long.
Yeah, and it was like three doubles on three pitches, if I'm not mistaken.
So yeah, I think it was like 3-on-4. It was really fast. Yeah.
So, what do you think now? This rain delay, and I saw your. I was thinking, well, that should help the Phillies. Then I read your column today, and it's a great column about what the delay means, and maybe describe what that means in your mind to the series as a whole.
Yeah, I think this really helps the Phillies. I think generally speaking, the Astros have a lot more pitching in their bullpen, in their rotation, pretty much all over the place. And so I think what this does, the rainout, is it allows the Phillies to skip Noah Syndergaard, who is probably the kind of least reliable pitcher that they were going to have to run out there during this series. It allows them to put Ranger Suarez, who's been really good, in tonight. Maybe they'll have to go back to Syndergaard later in the series, but they're going to have more options. So I think it just kind of gives them a chance to use their best weapons. The Astros aren't going to make huge alterations to their pitching because their pitching is so good. It's not like you're gaining a lot, but I think it helps the Phillies. And I think it also helps the Phillies that, you know, instead of saying, okay, we're going to postpone this game and we're going to cancel the off day on Thursday and we're going to get to the World Series, you know, get to Houston quickly and play Friday and Saturday, which would have been five straight games if they'd gone that far. They kept the off day. So there's going to be three and then a travel day and two more. And again, when you have less pitching, you need more rest. And I think the Phillies have less pitching. And so the more rest, the better. But, you know, all of this is sort of built. It helps, but I don't know how much it helps. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. And do you think the Phillies can pull it out in the end?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a really good chance. You know, I think the Astros are really, really good, but they have been beaten before by teams like this. You know, in 2019, when the Nationals kind of made their run, there was, you know, they couldn't stop them. And, you know, the Phillies kind of have that energy now. So, you know, I think it'll be close. But I definitely think the Phillies have a legitimate shot. But I think the Astros are just really, really good. And it's going to take a lot.
It will indeed. I was thinking about the Brewers and how the Phillies got in just kind of by the skin of their teeth. And the Brewers win, what, two more games?
It's
the Brewers, but I don't think they'd probably be doing as well as the Phillies did. What do you think about the whole playoff system itself? Maybe describe, there are non-baseball player or non-baseball fans listening, as well as a lot of baseball fans, but describe the playoff system, and it's changed a lot in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it really has. This year, it expanded. It used to be that, you know, there are three divisions in each league. Someone would win those divisions, those teams got in, and then there would be two wild card teams per league based on the people that had the best records but didn't win their division. And they would play one game against each other, and the winner would go play, and there would be those four teams left. And that incorporated, I think, if my math is correct, 10 teams total into the playoffs. This year, they expanded that to 12. And so the way it works is there were two series between three wildcard teams. That, you know, basically it just expanded to one more team qualified, which meant 12 of 30 teams were able to get in. And what we saw was that, you know, the Phillies were a team that would not have qualified under the old system. And here they are in the World Series. And, you know, the San Diego Padres might have been knocked out in a different system. And they got really far as well. And it meant a lot to that city. And Seattle, same thing. They hadn't been in the playoffs in 20-some years and got their first taste. So from my perspective, it's been really good for the game because, you know, it's
more teams.
Cities that, you know, yeah, more teams, you know, it's gotten more cities involved.
I think you're exactly right. And here with the Phillies, it's just interesting because they weren't the favorite, and I don't think, in any of those playoffs.
No, definitely not. I think
the Cardinals,
they were so bad this summer they had to fire their manager. They were, yeah, so it's, yeah, they're not supposed to be here, but they are. And I think what it does is it rewards teams that get better as the year goes along and that kind of come together late, and that's what they are.
Yeah. Talking with Chelsea Janes today, baseball reporter for the Washington Post. We're dealing with a bit about the World Series right now, and baseball in general. Certainly, if you have a question about baseball or the series or even the Brewers, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us. Email address ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Well, the Brewers, I didn't want to bring the Brewers into the conversation a bit because David Stern stepped away from his role as the Milwaukee Brewers president of baseball operations. Matt Arnold is taking over I think David Stearns was a great president of baseball operations. I think he made a huge mistake this year. But what was your take on? And you probably don't follow the Brewers certainly as much as people listening in do. But what were your thoughts, or what are your thoughts about Stearns?
You know, I wasn't surprised. I think there's been sort of rumblings for a while now that, you know, he's a coveted, you know, executive. People think he really knows what he's doing. And I think what he has done now is, you know, I know he said he'd be around for a while in his press conference. I don't know how, you know, how honestly true that is. He may not have any reason to believe otherwise now, but I think when the season ends, he'll hear from other teams. And, you know, I think he kind of got himself out of the way so he wouldn't have to sort of abandon ship in a more dramatic way if one of those jobs did come up. And, you know, people have talked about the Mets. They've talked about the Astros. Those are really desirable jobs. And it's not that, you know, he hasn't turned Milwaukee into somewhere you want to be. I think he has. But there's more money in those other places. So, you know, maybe he's staying forever. Maybe he, you know, as he said, it's time to spend time with family. But, you know, he's really respected around the game. You know, I know people talk about the Josh Hader trade, but I think there are a lot of people in the game who understood that. And, you know, so I think he's positioning himself to have some options, and I think he's going to have them.
You know, to just to mention that Hader trade for a minute, for a lot of people, I think, just felt that he sort of decided that the Brewers weren't good enough to make it to the World Series. and that's why Hader went.
You know, that's tough. I see that. I do. I think that there's kind of a little bit more to that also, in that, like, Hader had to that point for them. He didn't want to pitch more than one inning. You know, he had value still. You know, he was someone that teams were going to covet, so you kind of had a chance to get something for him. I think he probably thought, you know, I think certainly the effect on the clubhouse of that deal was to make them feel like they didn't have a shot. And because of that, it, I think, made things kind of fall apart a little bit. But I think from a baseball perspective, there were people who said, okay, like, you have, you know, Devin Williams, you know, you're going to get Rogers back, who's been pretty good. You know, you're trading Hader now, get the absolute max value out of him. You know, he doesn't like pitching more than one inning, but maybe other teams will think they can talk him into it. So there's all these reasons why I think in some ways it was savvy, but it might have just been one of those things that you got a little too savvy on. You know, you changed something that was, you broke something that wasn't broken, or tried to fix it, I guess, is what I'm saying. And so I think that's what happened there. But I do not think that trade will affect, in many cases, how he's viewed around the game as he, you know, enters this offseason.
Yeah. Chelsea Janes, our guest today, baseball reporter for the Washington Post. We're talking baseball to begin the show today. The World Series, we're talking Brewers, and I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today, Trina LaSusa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mailer for the Ideas Network. Talking baseball today with Chelsea Janes, a baseball reporter for the Washington Post. Excuse me. You can join in 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Just to stay for a minute or two on the Brewers, as you know, I took a look at who's still with the Brewers next year. And, you know, there's a lot of good pieces left. It's not like they're going to be a crummy team next year.
No, I think they've been built into a really kind of legitimate competitor in a division that is honestly, like, fairly bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You know, you can kind of see where you are midseason and make better trades, I guess, than the ones they had. And, you know, they've got the pitching. That I think to me is huge. You know, Burns and Woodruff and all those guys are still there. And as long as you have them, I think you're going to be very competitive. I think the problem they've had recently is very simple, which is that they have not spent or been able to spend or chosen to spend on hitting. You know, they don't have like kind of these big bats that the Cardinals were able to rely on. And it shows you, I think, how little, you know, they might need to do to be just that much better to get in the playoffs, that they really didn't hit at all this year and we're close, right? So it might not take that much to kind of boost them into the tier where you can see them in one of these wild card series, and then you take your chances with the good pitching. So yeah, I'd expect them and Matt Arnold, and you know, I think they probably, if I recognize that and we all recognize that, I'm sure they recognize that, and I'll be interested to see how they choose to, you know, try to mold their roster a little bit to kind of just get that one inch closer, which seems to be kind of all they need.
Yeah, you look, Woodruff, Burns, Lauer, and Willy Adames all have two more years before they hit free agency. That's a pretty good core right there. Adames with hitting and his play in the field and the pitching group is pretty strong. Narváez is into free agency, so they're going to need a catcher for sure, and maybe somebody in center field.
Yeah, I think they'll you know, Adames is a great piece, you know, to build around there. But they just need more. They just need more reliable bats, and maybe that means little upgrades everywhere or one big upgrade. I don't know necessarily who would fit that price range, but you know, I know they also make some really smart trades. So there's a lot there, but I don't think they're far. I think, you know, they just have to hit a little bit more and give those pitchers a chance.
Yeah, we have a Bryce Harper type.
He would help. Yeah.
You wrote a nice piece on Hoskins for the Phillies. Talk about Hoskins for a bit. I love that piece.
Oh, thank you. You know, he is someone I saw for a year. I covered the Nationals for a while, and they played the Phillies all the time. And, you know, Reese Hoskins was a good Phillies player. He's not, you know, a superstar, but he's kind of been there for years. And, you know, he is, he's a little bit overshadowed. I know he's had some big homers this postseason, but like you think of the Phillies, like Bryce Harper is the star of that team and Schwarber and Castellanos. But Hoskins is just a very steady guy. I had not been sort of privy to seeing him up close and personal talking, you know, day after day, like I have been recently. And he's got that kind of franchise staple vibe. You know, he's the guy that's going to always mean more in Philly than he would anywhere else. He reminds me of Ryan Zimmerman with the Nationals, you know, people of that ilk, and just a really steady guy who's seen this organization go through a lot. I think the Phillies have been one of the more frustrating organizations over the years.
Yeah.
Because they have the resources and it just hasn't come together. But, you know, you can tell everyone on that team and in the clubhouse, he's the guy they want to make sure enjoys this, because he is the one who fully understands what it means to be a Philly. And I think that hasn't been flattering, you know, during a lot of his tenure. But, yeah, he's someone they all really look up to in a clubhouse that is really a comfortable place, like a very comfortable clubhouse. The vibes, as they say, are really good. And I think he has a lot to do with that.
They were pretty loose last night before the game that didn't happen. I think you wrote about that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in Halloween costume. They had a coach in a mask on the field. I think that everyone there maybe had a sense early in the day that that game wasn't going to happen. But, they just are very calm. It just does not seem to have hit them at all how far they've come. And I think the goal for them should be to have it not, because I think once it does, they might realize, oh, wow, we were not supposed to be here, but here we are.
And I just want to say a word about their stadium, because that is like an extra benefit playing at their home.
I think that's right. It's a beautiful stadium. I think it often kind of gets lost because they haven't been great, but yeah, that's one of the absolute loudest fan bases you will find. It's like a hockey crowd at a baseball game. You know, it's like, it's not even New York level. It's you know, something between Boston and New York. You know, a lot of edge, a lot of expletives. But I think it's a really thrilling place. Like I actually am really excited to sort of hear it tonight, because I've heard it's been really special. But yeah, when the Phillies are good, like, that city cares about the Phillies, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun the next few days for everyone to kind of get to see that.
So you'll be at the game?
Yes.
That's got to be a real perk, although it's work.
Exactly. Yeah, no complaints from me for sure.
David in La Crosse, let's go to you. David, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Sorry if this is a little off topic, but I'm wondering if your guests could comment about antitrust exemption that Congress has given to baseball and other professional sports, for that example. Just imagine if there it was just a free market and there weren't any rules about players and how long they had to stay before they were a free agent or salary caps or so on. If she could comment on that, and to the extent that it's ever been used as a lever over professional baseball or other sports about, hey, clean up your act or we're going to take this away.
What do you think?
I think it's a really timely question. I don't think we've ever seen the antitrust exemption come under fire the way we have lately, and I think there are many reasons for that. I think one of them is that, you know, so baseball was granted an antitrust exemption that, you know, way back in the early 1900s, that has since been kind of panned by judges since, but like it's there, and they just say, you know, we wouldn't grant this again, but here it is. Other sports don't experience the same thing. They've kind of had to operate within different rules, but the antitrust exemption has really allowed Major League Baseball early on to limit free agency movement, as you said, to kind of really control the lives of their players and keep wages in the minor leagues very low and relocate teams at will and sort of all these things that would be kind of anti-competitive practices and kind of imply collusion between owners if that mattered, but it doesn't because they're exempt from that. And little by little, they've chipped away at that. The players' union has, you know, they've bargained for free agency. They've had the Curt Flood Act of 1998 sort of litigated away the parts of the antitrust exemption that let teams, you know, have a lot of control over their players' careers. It sort of loosened that, basically eliminating that part, and then, but still kind of leaving the rest of the exemption to govern how teams move or whatever. So, it's been a really complicated relationship. And in recent years, you know, minor league baseball players who make, I mean, $14,000 a season and nothing in the off season, you know, far less than the minimum wage, have kind of started speaking up about that. I think social media has helped them. There have been some really high profile lawsuits too, that have challenged both those wages and also the relocation and elimination of a lot of minor league teams in the last few years, something that, you know, people argue MLB wouldn't be able to do if, you know, that antitrust exemption were not in place. So there's a lot coming at it right now. And I think, you know, that is one reason we saw the minor league players unionize very quickly in the last 6 months. They went from never even considering such a thing, because if you're in the minor leagues, those teams control your career and you don't want to be the one saying, hey, while we're at it, can I get more money? Can I do this? You know, you don't want to be the one that they can blacklist because they control your future. But everyone sort of said, oh, we'll do it now. We're ready. They unionized. Basically, now they can collective bargain for wages and conditions and things like that. So, and that sort of gets MLB off the hook too, because that was one of the areas where the antitrust exemption was coming under fire. Like, it was letting them keep wages down for minor leaguers. And now that they're collective bargaining, you know, that doesn't matter. So it's really interesting. I think there's a lot going on there. I think there's a chance that, you know, the Senate Judiciary Committee has sent letters to everyone asking them to defend that exemption. I think that's potentially more for show than anything else. I sometimes wonder if they don't have better things to do. But, you know, I think it's just kind of coming under fire everywhere. And I don't know what that results in, but I think that it means that there's some change coming. And it has come. You know, in the way that the Major League Baseball does business.
Yeah, it does. David, good, great question. Thank you for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Here's an email from Gail in Madison. Why is the World Series so late this year? Seems like it's usually done in October, but game three in November?
Yeah, it's rough. It's funny. One of the things that is sort of a staple of the baseball season rhythm is these general managers meetings that get held the first week of November. And, you know, traditionally, everyone else is fairly rested when they get there. And then the two teams that won the World Series, they've had a week to celebrate, and then their GMs show up and kind of enjoy themselves. But this year, if the World Series goes seven games, those meetings will start the next day. So that will be pretty wild. But yeah, it's all because of the lockout. It's because of, you know, the owners locked out the players to try to kind of hasten along collective bargaining negotiations that, in fact, did not go much faster because of that. And, you know, it forced the regular season to start a week or two late, forced them to push everything back. And then I think they also expanded the playoffs this year. So it was kind of a perfect storm where, you know, they lost a week in a year where their playoffs were going to seem long because they had never been this long. And now with the weather and stuff, it's late. But I don't think it will be this late going forward. It'll, you know, I think it'll be back to sort of a week before where we are right now. But it does feel late, and it's been a long year for a lot of people, I think, because of that lockout. And it really is interesting to see November dates on these games.
It is indeed. Well, next year, the Major League Baseball is making some changes. They're banning the infield shift, which the Brewers used a lot, as did, I think, probably every other team. For those who don't know, what is that, and what do you think about it?
The infield shift is basically, you know, these teams have so much data now, they can pretty much predict where someone's going to hit a ball. And so they'll move their infielders around. So for a hitter that they know is going to hit the ball to the left side of the field more often, they'll move three fielders over there and leave one on the right side. And it just makes it a lot harder for that hitter to get a hit in the way that they are sort of naturally, inclined to swing, you know, that the data shows that they hit. And so, I think there's a lot of frustration from hitters about it. And so as a result, strikeouts have gone up. You don't see as many hits. You just don't see sort of as much action because, they're getting better at stopping people from hitting it and from letting those balls get through the infield. So something that they have decided to try, they've tried in the minor leagues for a few years, is requiring that teams have two infielders on each side of second base with their feet on the dirt at all times, which is normally where you have everyone. But, you know, teams have gotten creative. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what effect that actually has. Some people love it. Some people think the shift has ruined everything because it's changed baseball and made those kind of, you know, rallies where there's a lot of hits, it's made them harder to come by. Some people think it's insane, like that, you know, we've figured out how to be really good at this game and you're telling us we can't do that. And I'll be really interested to see sort of where that one plays out, because I think a lot of people think they know what the effect will be, and they sort of disagree on it. So to me, that means that no one really does, and we're all going to kind of find out together whether it, you know, makes the game more enjoyable to watch or not.
You know, there's another one, and this is, I was just reading something about the length of time. You know, there's always complaining about, baseball takes too long. But somebody did the math on baseball versus professional football, and it turns out that professional football games take 15 minutes longer on average than a baseball game.
They do. I think the sort of the argument against baseball in that case is the pace of action. You know, there's not so much time between things in football. It's a little more action packed. I mean, it's not so much more action packed, I think, as some people argue.
No.
You know, there's a lot of huddling and downtime and pointing and stuff. But I think, it is just a different amount of action. And, you know, that's part of what baseball obviously is, the time for thought, the time for overanalyzation between pitches. But they're going to try to fix that too next year. They're going to implement a pitch clock where, you know, it's going to limit sort of the endless, you know, fidgeting between pitches and all that. I think it'll be like 19 seconds. You know, the batter has to get in the box, the pitcher has to pitch. And if you don't, if you're a batter, you're not in the box, you'll get a strike called on you. If you're a pitcher and you haven't thrown, you'll get a ball called on you. They've tested it in the minor leagues. I've seen it in action. It's incredible. I think it's one of the best things they could do for the game. It takes out all the downtime. As soon as you see it, you realize how much wasted time there is. And it doesn't cut down on the action. I think there is a hope that the faster the game moves, minor league game time's dropped by half an hour, which is huge. And And I think the thought is the more quickly you make people move, the less perfect they will be. And that might sort of alleviate some of the strikeout stuff. It might, you know, just change the game a little bit. So I think it's going to be really fascinating next year to see it. And I think it's going to be a really positive change.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it, too. There'll be a lot less of retightening of the batting gloves and stepping out of the box and all that sort of thing that goes on now. Baseball is going to increase the size of the base from 16 to 18 inches square. And you might not think that's much, but that could make some changes.
Yeah, it's a funny change. I've had the chance to see those bases too, and they don't look a lot bigger, honestly. It's not like you're sitting there and they look clown car-y. They're just kind of, you don't notice. Even when you're on the field, it's not that obvious. But I think the goal, and I find this laughable, but it must not be because they've tested it and they're doing it, is, I think, to make it a little bit easier to steal bases. I don't know that cutting off an inch or two either way will do that, but I think the other argument is the bigger the base, there's this argument that it's better for safety, that you're going to have fewer collisions at the base because there's more room for everyone to get a foot on, get a hand on, whatever it is. We'll see. I think it's funny. People joke about it, you know, the size of the bases, because it's like, you know, that extra inch isn't going to make me that much faster, but we'll see. I think, you know, over the course of a long season and year on year, like we might be able to sense some kind of a change there. And I'm curious to see what it'll be.
Well, I was thinking too, at first base, which I played, the bang bang plays at first base might give the team in the field a little bit of an advantage in some ways.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I think that's possible. I don't know. It's really tough to say, and it's one of the rules, you know, there's been a lot of talk about all these rules this year and the changes coming. And it's the one that people sort of, I mean, truly just kind of laugh at, because I think it seems almost funny that like something that small would have any effect. You know, it's not like you're making the bat bigger or the ball bigger. You're just kind of like making that thing plopped out in the dirt a little bit bigger. I'm really curious about it. I think it's interesting. And, you know, I think they must expect it to really have an effect.
There's an 11-person competition committee that votes on these updates. What who's on that committee? Or what types of people are on that committee?
Pretty wild, actually. That committee was agreed to in this year's collective bargaining agreement between the owners and the players' union. The players have been very hesitant to give the owners the opportunity to make rule changes without their input. So they agreed to an 11-person committee that has six owners, or six representatives of Major League Baseball on it, like five umpires, and I think it's four players and like an umpire. So basically, whatever the ratio is, and I'm blanking on the exact specifics, there are more representatives from Major League Baseball on the committee than anyone else. So if MLB's owners want a rule change, they can make it because it's a vote. It's, you know, they're always going to have the majority. So it's kind of a weird like figurehead committee, because what MLB wants, it's going to get. But you know, the players agree to it, and that committee, you know, has to suggest a rule, and then they have to research the rule, and then, you know, they can vote on it. And they've voted on these, and they voted them through, because, you know, some of the players have been worried about some of these changes, that, you know, they just don't like change, I think, players in general. But they had no real mechanism to sort of shut that down, which is funny, because they could have created one if they were willing to negotiate it, and for some reason they did not.
Yeah, and as my understanding is that the players were actually voted against the shift ban and the pitch clock.
I think that's right. I think now that it's happening, I've heard a lot of pitchers say, oh, we love the pitch clock, this is going to help us, you know. These guys talk themselves into whatever the rules are. I think that's sort of the consensus, is like, tell us the rules so we can figure out how to break them and or to get around them. And I've heard that from a lot of people. I think, you know, they're going to have spring training to adjust. They're, you know, the timing is not rushed. It's all going to have time for everyone to figure it out. So I think it'll be fine. But it is funny just sort of watching the psychology of these guys go from, you can't change this, you can never change this, to, oh, now I figured out how I'm going to use it. Like, they're not going to know what hit them, you know?
Anything, I mean, as you look ahead, is there, you know, they're competing with pro basketball and football. Do you see other changes as a sport and baseball maybe in the next decade or so?
I think so. I think the pitch clock is going to be the big one when we look back. I think that is going to allow baseball to still be baseball, but sort of just, you know, streamline it for a time when attention spans are shorter. But I think there's things they've thought about. You know, at one time they were thinking about even moving the mound back because the pitchers had gotten so good or whatever it was. I don't think that's going to happen. But it's really hard to say. I think that these are going to be a big wave. And I think maybe the one you'll see is automatic umpires. You know, they now we have the technology. It was like tennis or whatever, where you could see where the ball lands in real time. And so that would sort of change something. Players are unsurprisingly reluctant to see that as well, even though it might perfect the strike zone. They've tested it in the minors, and everyone I've talked to has said, you know, it's fine, but there's no one to yell at, and they miss that. So, you know, it takes away their sense of control, which is really funny. There would still be an umpire in that scenario. He just sort of wouldn't be in charge of
balls and strikes.
You know, the computer would back it up. Right. So anyway, I think that's kind of the big one that could be on the way. But other than that, I think this is going to be a big wave, and I'm not sure how much more you can change and have it kind of still be the same game.
Yeah. Boy, well, you're doing a wonderful job. I love reading your columns, Chelsea, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's been a real treat for me to have a chance to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Chelsea Janes, a baseball reporter for the Washington Post, and a lot of fun for me to talk with her. I hope it was fun for you as well. I learned a few things, and I hope you did as well. And speaking of learning, you're going to learn a little bit about a football game that was played on Christmas Eve overseas. There's a book out, new book out on that. It's called The Mosquito Bowl, and we'll talk with the author next. I'm Larry Mueller.